This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available if at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Blocked by Martinuk. They didn't get it out. Carlson across for Ovechkin. Chikrin, the defenseman's at the net. Now Carlson scores! John Carlson! A power play goal!
As Wilson slides it through Chatfield, and John Carlson, the longest serving Capital, comes in on the back door.
First voice you heard is that of one of the best in the business, one of the best ever. Do it. Sean McDonough last night in D.C. again with Ray Ferraro and Emily Kaplan on the call of Washington's 3-1 Game 2 win to even up the series. It resumes tomorrow night in Raleigh against Carolina. Sean McDonough, nice enough to join us right now. You know, I've had you on the show before, not that I'm asking you to remember it, but you've always been one of my favorites. I think you are just incredible at what you do. And before we get to last night's game and this series, I've thought about this as it relates to you over the years. I don't think anybody has ever done four sports at the level that you've done them at. Maybe there are some people that I'm forgetting. You know, I don't think Al did, you know, I don't think Michaels or Summerall did hockey. I don't think Costas did. I could be wrong. But am I right that in terms of doing football, basketball, baseball, and hockey at a very high level, that you are unique?
I guess, you know, I first of all, I really appreciate your kind comments, Kevin, and thanks for having me on. I guess, you know, I haven't really thought about it that much. I know some of the people you mentioned and some others who come to mind. You know, Marv Albert obviously did the Rangers for a long time, did NBC football, was best known for the basketball, but I don't think Marv ever did baseball.
Right.
You know, I think I can think of other people who probably did two or three at a national level, but I really don't know the answer to your question. You know, I just feel very fortunate because I love doing all the sports. It's really what I love about my situation at ESPN, the opportunity to do a lot of different things. And I get asked all the time, well, of all these sports you do, what's your favorite one? And I never have an answer because I really enjoy all of them. When I grew up knowing this is what I want to do for a living, you know, I was a all-around sports fan and kind of wanted to do exactly what I'm doing now.
Yeah, obviously with your father doing what he did for all those years. So how about not your favorite? Is there one that you think you do best?
I don't know. You know, I think if I had to say, I'd probably get the most positive feedback about college football. You know, the feedback about hockey tends to be I'm great or terrible and nobody seems to be in the middle.
Yeah.
That's not exactly true. That's an exaggeration, but you know, what I like most now about my situation is if you said what would be the two favorite things that you would do, I would say hockey and college football. And that's really exactly what I'm doing now. I'm doing the occasional other thing every now and then. I do a baseball game or a golf event. You know, I'm kind of disappointed that they moved the PGA Championship to May because, you know, I used to be able to do that in August with ESPN and our group, but now they've moved it to May. You know, it's in the middle of the hockey playoffs, so I don't get to do that anymore. But I really feel blessed because the two things I enjoy the most, hockey and college football, are the things that I'm majoring in right now.
What do you think, for you, what's the hardest to do? What's the easiest to do?
I think hockey is the hardest, and in large part just because of the handicap, like last night there in Washington, of being really far away from the action. I mean, we're extremely high. I always tell friends of mine, you know, in most of these arenas, if you bought the worst seat, you know, it'd be the last row of the upper deck. Well, go up there and then look further up and further away from the ice, and that's where we are. So
yeah, I know where that press box is. That's way up there.
Yeah, it's way up there. And, you know, it's really hard to be sure exactly where the puck is. You know, a lot of times it's difficult to tell the players apart. You know, like with Washington, you know, 80 Dubois and 88 Mangiapane, it looks a lot alike from up above. 22 and 27 look alike. So, you know, there's a hesitation where in some of these places, you have a low booth. You know, I was envious watching Bob Wischusen last night in Vegas. You're about 20 rows off the ice. You feel like you can reach out and touch the players. You know, you're that close. So you really know where the puck is and if the shot hit the goalie's pad or if it just completely missed the net or if it grazed the post, where, you know, most of these arenas were so high and so far away, it's kind of an educated guess. And it really slows down your call. You know, when you're down low and you know what's happening, it just comes out much more crisply than it does. You know, I hate when I watch the tapes when we're really far away because there's just a slowness about the call that I wish wasn't there, but it's really a byproduct of just not being 100% sure all the time what's going on.
Well, do you, first of all, you said most places are really high up. So the Caps are not unique from that standpoint?
No. As a matter of fact, Carolina's worse. You know, Florida's really bad. Last year, and even this year, you may have noticed if you watched the game, we did a game at Florida in the Tampa Bay, Florida series, and ESPN, with the cooperation of the Panthers and the NHL, and we were there for the Stanley Cup final last year, they built us a lower booth, basically on a platform where they put some still photographers, and again, about 15 or 20 rows off the ice, and the difference is incredible. Not just in, you know, how quickly you're able to identify everything and be sure of what you're seeing and what's actually happening, but the emotion of the crowd. You know, where we are, most of these places, you're really separated from the energy and the noise because you're just so far up in this sterile booth with a headset on, where when we were down there, I mean, you know, when Ray Ferraro was speaking after a couple of Florida goals, I couldn't hear a word he was saying in my headset because it was just so loud. You're enveloped by the noise. So I would say 2/3 to 3/4 of the TV booths around the NHL are very high, and there are a handful of low ones. Edmonton is low. Dallas is kind of in the middle, but it's really good. Montreal's awesome. Pittsburgh's really good. New Jersey. But most of them are far away. And unfortunately, the just two in this series are really far away.
Just out of curiosity, when you're in, and I know where that perch is, I mean, there's altitude. You almost need oxygen at Capital One where you sit and where the media sits. Do you call the action with binoculars, or do you sometimes go off the live feed in the monitor?
No, I don't do either one, you know, and I've tried both. It's just really hard to follow the puck for me through a pair of binoculars from that distance. And then you kind of get focused in too much on the puck, and you don't see things that would be out of the periphery of the binoculars, like, you know, the defenseman fell down or the goalie lost his stick or things like that. So I don't do that. I don't know. I've asked a lot of my colleagues, do you ever call it off the monitor? And I've never heard one person who says yes. Another part of that problem is the monitors aren't very big, so it's not much of a help. So it's just, you know, it's the nature of it. I just celebrate when we have a booth that's low. A part of me is cheering for that we'll have the Western Conference final if it's, you know, Edmonton or Vegas or Dallas or even Winnipeg, because all of those booths are low compared to the Eastern Conference final. All four of these are super high. Toronto is very high as well. As a matter of fact, when we did the All-Star game up in Toronto, guess it was 2 years ago now, Burke Magnus, who's one of our bosses who basically runs now the production side of ESPN, came to the booth, and the first thing he said to me was, "Are all the booths this high?" No, but most of them, you know. And it was a good thing he came up there, because he was the one who signed off on us having the low booth for the Stanley Cup final last year in Florida, which was a huge difference maker.
We're talking to, of course, and you recognize the voice, Sean McDonough. You know, I mentioned, I think there's a uniqueness to the four sports that you've done at a very high level. I also think, and I've made this observation about you before as a fan on my show before, I think there's a uniqueness to your style from this perspective, and I'm wondering if you think it's fair. I think as a play-by-play guy, it's unique to inject opinion into the call, which I feel I get from you. Now, let me just say, I love it, and I think your opinions are super sharp in all of the sports that you do. I'm not an expert on hockey, so I have no idea if you're right or wrong. But do you feel that observation is fair, that maybe relative to other play-by-play guys, that you inject more opinion and analysis than a lot of other play-by-play guys do?
Yes, I do think it's fair, and I have always been that way, and I think it's a product. You mentioned my dad earlier. You know, I grew up the son of Will McDonough, who was a famous sports writer and the pioneer of the first newspaper man who made the transition into television as what Adam Schefter does now. And you know, when we were kids, we'd sit and I had two brothers, and you know, we're all sports fans. My sister's sports fans too, and yeah, we'd sit and watch games with my dad, and we wouldn't just stare blankly at the screen. I mean, he'd engage us in conversation about whatever it was—the officiating, the why do you think the coach went for that first down, or do you think he should have? So I think we were kind of taught to be analytical thinkers from an early age, just by sitting there with him. And I've always said, Kevin, that I think my job, is to be talking about what the people at home are thinking about when they watch the game. You know, if I'm sitting in the booth and I think, wow, that's a really bad call, then chances are most of the people who are watching the game are thinking that too. So that's something that we should be talking about. And I don't think, you know, opinion just needs to be the domain of the analyst. You know, I think we're around these sports all the time. Hopefully we're educated enough that we would have an educated opinion. So that's really what I try to do, just talk about what I think the people, if they were sitting on their couch watching the game with us, what they'd be saying to each other as they were watching the game.
Yeah, I look, as somebody who is not asked to report on anything but to opine on everything, I actually don't mind that, and I think you do it really well. You know, there's been some discussion, as I'm sure there is with everything that you do, from fan bases. And you mentioned that in hockey you get probably as much, you know, constructive critique as you do with anything. Do you feel that you've gotten that from Caps fans in these first two games?
If I have, I don't know, because I don't do social media.
Okay.
I don't have a Twitter account, Instagram, any of that stuff. I never have. I don't even try to look into it. So the only time I'm really aware of the feedback is if I see an article. You know, somebody set me up with this Google search thing. So whenever my name appears in an article, I get a link to it through Google. So, you know, I see, and some of them, they aren't all just mainstream articles. Some of them are, you know, websites that I've never heard of, or you've never heard of, like most people.
Of course. Right.
But what's interesting is they write articles based on five tweets from random people out there who may have six followers each, you know, and then it's people are outraged. Viewers are outraged that Sean McDonough's on this game, you know, and, and it's just funny because, it's both ends of the spectrum. You know, the other night there was an article about the Colorado fans were upset that I was doing game seven because Bob Wischusen had done the series up till then. And then there was another article about Joe Buck had tweeted out that he was in awe of Kenny Albert and me and our talent because of the great job that we did in the game sevens of the Dallas and Winnipeg series there on back-to-back nights. So that's more meaningful to me. You know, if six people sitting in their basement want to tweet out something that I'm not any good, they're entitled to that opinion, and I'm 100% fine with it. You know, I tend to pay more attention to the Joe Bucks and the Marv Alberts and Bob Costas and Mike Breens and people like that who have sent me very nice texts about hockey over the years saying they really enjoy it. You know, so that's important to me. I care about what people are educated in the sport think. And the vast majority of the feedback that I've gotten within the sport has been extremely positive.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Well, as you should, and just to be completely open, I talked about this at the beginning because there was some, from Caps fans, some criticism that you were showing some sort of bias towards Carolina or anti to Washington, and I think that's a product of two things. One, we're just coming off the first round in which we get the hometown announcers. Now, Joe Beninati's as good as it gets. I'm sure you're very familiar with Joe and Craig Lachlan.
I've said that many times. I think
they're great.
Going to win the Foster Hewitt Award is, you know, but going to the broadcaster's part of the Hockey Hall of Fame. He's great.
He's great.
And, so
and then, you know,
and so is Smoke and Al Koken and the rest of their group.
Al's great. Alan May, Craig Lachlan. It's a phenomenal, you know, team that's been together for years. But I think the other part of it is the Caps were dominated in game one. The score didn't reflect that. And then in the first period last night, it felt like an extension.
More of the same. You know, we were on for a lot of those Montreal games, and I think if they watched our telecast instead of Joe and Locker, and they made a good choice to watch Joe and Locker, you know, they wouldn't have felt like we were biased. You know, if anything, when the home team does well, and you played the call of the John Carlson goal last night, I certainly yelled more loudly than I would have if the other team scored, because you're yelling over the home crowd. So.
Yeah,
I also don't. It's another reason why I don't have social media, because I just don't pay any attention to that. I don't care who wins. I really don't, and I'd have no reason to be biased in favor of Carolina and against Washington. You know, I don't.
Especially since Carolina's positioning for you is even worse than Washington.
Yeah, even worse. Right. And you know, and quite frankly, I mean, if you're going to say, well, what would you like to see going forward? You know, Carolina plays a style that doesn't always translate to very exciting TV. You know, they play that grinded out, low scoring defensive game. It's not an up and down game, you know, as we've seen in these first two games. So, I mean, if anything, you know, you'd want the team that has a better chance to go up and down to be successful. But I honestly don't care, you know, and it's just, your hometown announcers are going to be more skewed toward your home team when you watch them, because that's what they should be doing.
So let's talk about the state of the series, because through the first period last night, I think there was a lot of concern and worry. What happened in the final two periods, and how does that sort of carry over to game three?
Yeah, I think the concern was justified. I was concerned for Washington, too. You know, we met with Spencer Carberry. We meet with both coaches before every game. And the first thing I said to him before last night's game was, well, how is this going to be different? You know, because if it's not different, the likelihood of them winning was pretty low. As you said, the score was close in game one, but if you watch the game, it really wasn't close territorially and that sort of thing. So, I wasn't sure, you know, when he said, well, we can do basically what they did to us, which is get the puck in the offensive end and keep it in there. And it didn't, as you said, Kevin, it didn't start out that way. And then, you know, they kind of came around to it, especially in the second period. I mean, they had 11 shots on goal in the second period. They had 14 the entire first game. So, you know, they are capable of doing it. You know, they have guys who can go in on the forecheck and retrieve the puck and cause turnovers, and they did some of that last night. So I think it's a really even series. I think there are two teams that in many ways stylistically are similar. Both coaches have said that. And, you know, I think it's going to be a long series.
What do you think of this sport from this perspective? Because I do think you've got your observations are always keen and sharp in that we could watch a game like Tuesday nights in which I'm not a hockey guy, and I came in here and said I'm a sports fan. That was clearly a one-sided beatdown, and yet the score didn't reflect it. The Caps could have easily won that game. They were up 1-0 through, you know, half of the third period. What do you think about a sport which the results tend to be random, for the lack of a better description?
Yeah, I think that's sometimes the case. I mean, some teams that dominate the game win 6-1, too. So, you know, that happens. I think it's been a recurring theme with Carolina, right? This is the way they've played for 7 years now under Rod Brind'Amour. And I think he feels like they have to play that way because they don't necessarily have, you know, the guys who are going to carry the puck through the other team. And a lot of teams don't have those guys because there aren't that many of them. But he really believes this is the way they need to play offense. You know, get people in front of the net, get as many pucks toward the net as you can, and maybe you wind up like the winning goal in game one, Jacob Slavin. It wasn't pretty, but you know, you keep throwing the puck at the net, and sooner or later some of those are going to go in. So, you're right. You know, the premise of your question is spot on. You know, it can happen that one team seems to dominate territorially, piles up many more shots, but doesn't win. You know, it almost happened, as you said, in game one. And, you know, the other great equalizer in hockey is the goalie. I mean, you know, you could,
of course,
dominate. Logan Thompson obviously played really well in both games. But, you know, one team could dominate territorially in the shot totals. But if the goalie plays great for the other team, that's the great equalizer. And it's part of what makes hockey great, in my opinion.
Why do you think, and we're sitting here at 1-1, but even going back to before game one, why do you think the Caps, who ended up with the best record in the Eastern Conference, the second best record in the sport during the regular season, are shorted so much by odds makers, by so-called experts? You know, they were an underdog going into this series. They're still an underdog in this series. They're the last odds favorite to win the cup out of the eight teams, you know, remaining. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. And I assume that's determined by people who actually bet on these things. I don't know. I mean, I think part of it might be that they didn't finish the season well. Maybe that turned some people sour on them. Yeah, I thought that was really understandable. You know, they had a variety of reasons why I think they weren't very good at the end of the year. I think the Ovechkin thing, you know, took a lot of the attention and maybe took something out of them a little bit, at least in terms of the focus. I think they had their playoff spot secured so early that, you know, there wasn't the motivation to keep driving because we need to make the playoffs or we need to make sure we're the number one seed. You know, I think the injury to Protas at the end of the year was key, and it's key to their chances now that he's back because he was one of the best players in the league this year and, you know, on any team. You know, when you talk about
right,
30 goals, 66 points, his size and speed, penalty killing ability, I mean, he was plus 40 in the regular season, which was third best in the league. He's a great player, and I give the Caps a lot of credit because, you know, a lot of teams, when they decide, well, we're going to turn over the roster a little bit, which they started to do a couple of years ago, you know, they tear it all down and then, you know, try to build it back up again. And that doesn't work. I mean, look at Chicago, look at Arizona, look at what San Jose is going through now. You know, it doesn't work. Or if it does, it takes a really long time. They had faith, you know, Brian McClellan, Chris Patrick, the coaches, they had faith in guys like McMichael and Protas, who were first-round picks. These guys are going to develop, and they're going to score more, and they're going to give us more. And they did. And, you know, I think that's been a huge part of the success of their team. And then some of the other additions they made, bringing in guys like Matt Roy has been a nice addition, and some others. Obviously, the trade for Dubois worked out well. But, you know, to answer your question, I don't know the answer because when I look at their team, I think they're really solid in every area. I mean, we're seeing what Logan Thompson's capable of doing from a goaltending standpoint. He did it for most of the year. You know, they do have depths of scoring. I think, unlike Carolina, which annually struggles with, you know, oh gosh, we just don't have enough guys we can depend on to get us a goal if we really need it, which is why I was surprised they flipped Rantanen into Dallas. You know, Washington does. You know, they have three lines, even four lines. I mean, when you look at what a guy like Duhaime's been doing on the fourth line, that can give you scoring, and the defense corps can give you scoring, as we saw last night from Carlson. Yeah. And Chychrun's, you know, one of the best defensemen in the league from that standpoint. So I don't understand it. You know, I think they're one of the best teams in the league. They were the number one seed in the East for a reason. I think they have as good a chance as anybody to win the Stanley Cup.
Last one, and I appreciate the time. You know, this era of Alex Ovechkin in this town has produced one cup and one deep run. That's it. You know, 2018. And then we had, you know, a memorable season with him chasing down Gretzky this year. Do you think that he and, you know, basically everybody by extension in the organization needs another deep run for, you know, a much stronger legacy than just the 1 year of playoff success?
I don't think he does. You know, to me, he cemented himself as one of the greatest goal scorers of all time. Maybe the greatest, obviously. You know, he got two Gretzky in the same number of games, which was remarkable, really. I mean, it was so amazing to me that it was literally the same number of games. You know, his place is secure forever. I mean, he's one of the great players of all time. And I, you know, what I admire more the last few years, and you know, we've been back in the NHL for 4 years now at ABC and ESPN, and have done a bunch of Capitals games, and that he has done it while playing such a physical style, you know, being so eager to go hit people and been as durable as he's been. I mean, he missed the 17 games this year, 16 of them because of the broken leg. I'm still mad at Spencer Carberry for taking him out on that Saturday afternoon a few weeks ago at the end of the regular season. We had a Saturday afternoon game of the week, you may remember, in Columbus. And, you know, he had just gotten the record. And really the reason we scheduled that game, our programming people did, was that
you thought it was going to be
it. He does it.
Yeah.
But so he didn't play. So I said to Spencer in our meeting before the game, I'm taking back my vote for the Jack Adams Award because I just voted for you. But now I'm not sure I'm going to if you're not going to have Ovechkin in our game on national TV today. But no, I don't think he needs it.
I really appreciate this. You're incredible at what you do. Keep it up. I think you're off Washington, Carolina. I think TNT's got the next few games, and then you're back on it towards the end of the series.
A lot of NBA coming up. You know, we split the hockey and the NBA with TNT, so it's a nice partnership. They take over. We would be back if there's a game 6 and 7 in Carolina and Washington, and I think there will be at least a 6 because I don't see anybody winning 3 games in a row here. From this point on.
Thank you for doing this. Really appreciate the time. Take care.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks.
Sean McDonough, everybody. There you go. On the call of games 1 and 2. Yeah, the hockey arena setup for the announcers is usually not great. There's not a lot of room, you know, when it's played on ice and there aren't seats on the floor. All right, we are done for the day. I'll have my entire mock schedule out tomorrow on my podcast, and I'll bring a lot, all of it to the show on Monday. Again, I have them opening at Dallas on Sunday night, September 7th, and have them playing in Madrid. I had it before the leaks on November 16th. Have a great weekend. Chris Russell's next.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap, and the ball! Free! It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson, and he scores on the last play of the game! Unbelievable!
Podcasting isn't just evolving, it's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Friedman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, And yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The revolution redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colone for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.